Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs, although today it's Torn by Germs, because I am John English, the Germs guy, and I am here with Torn by Devin, and absent is Jedi Alan Zog, so we're just going to do a briefer episode with the two of us. How you doing, Devin?
Hey, I'm doing well. How you doing, John?
I'm just swell. Did you have a chance to watch the game last night?
You know, I did not, simply because I had a feeling that it was already over. And I just didn't want to watch it happen.
It was pretty obvious right away. I will say that. We're recording Friday morning. Oklahoma City eliminated the San Antonio Spurs last night. All indications were that it was going to be OKC's night, and they didn't disappoint. Kevin Durant had 37. Westbrook had 28. And it could have been Tim Duncan's last game. And what really stuck out to me, I was looking at the box score when it was over, Tim Duncan was a plus 13 in 34 minutes. So in the 14 minutes he wasn't on the floor, the Spurs were minus 27. He did everything he could, but the Thunder just had too much firepower going on and the Spurs couldn't stop him.
Now, I saw something as far as Oklahoma City, the offense went just the way they have to in order to succeed, it seems like, and everything seemed to go through Durant and Westbrook, if I read correctly.
Yeah. KD shot 24, Westbrook shot 21. No one else shot more than 9, which is ideal when you have two of the 10 best players in the NBA. You want them to have the bulk of the responsibility. And everyone else was just kind of there for cleanup. I mean, Steven Adams, he only took 7 shots, but he wound up finishing 15 and 11. It just wasn't a good night defensively for the Spurs, which is unusual. But LaMarcus Aldridge in particular, I was disappointed with him on the defensive end. You know, other than his rebounding, he had 14 rebounds. But the Spurs just didn't have an answer for Durant. And most teams usually don't. But yeah, nothing worked for them. And this whole series has been kind of interesting because Game 2 is one where it got to the end and it felt like the refs were screwing the Thunder, but they won anyway. And then Game 5 ended where the refs were screwing the Spurs, and the Spurs wound up losing. And so it was just one of those things where the Thunder wound up coming ahead. Overall, I would say the officiating wound up being even, as far as evenly being correct or incorrect on both sides. It's just that when the odds were against the Thunder, they were able to get the win, and when the odds were against the Spurs, they weren't. And that ultimately was the difference in the series.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens in this offseason, because you may have a Duncanless Spurs for the first time since 98. Is that right?
Yeah, 98.
You know, so that there could be a big change. I thought he was under contract for one more season. I could be mistaken.
Tim Duncan has a player option for $6.3 million next year. He could accept that. He could opt out and get another one-year deal, or he could just decide, you know what, I think he's 40 now, isn't he?
Or yeah, almost 40. I think so.
So he might just decide that's it. And, you know, if he goes, you got to know Ginobili's going. And then it's a matter of does Popovich decide he wants to go too?
What would you do in his position? I mean, the Spurs are coming off their best season ever in franchise history, I believe. They set the record for home wins, I believe. And they really were favored in this series. I mean, you remember Game 1 against Oklahoma City. They just abused them. Is it time for him to hang it up, though, if he's closing out his last playoff game with a plus 10, plus 13?
I think Ginobili's done, but I think Duncan can go another year. He's not hurting his team. His skills are definitely not what they were, but he's still playing on a high level. You know, if you took his numbers and his effect on the court and just gave him a different name and said he was a 28-year-old player, you would still say this is a really good player. So I think / hope that he does come back for one more year.
See, and I kind of have that hope, not really, but I saw one of the sports social media accounts float the idea of Kevin Durant ending up in San Antonio. And I just thought, well, that means that Duncan can come off the bench and win 5 more titles because he can be there until he's in his 60s, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
So it'll be interesting.
Boy, do I hate the idea of KD in San Antonio.
I know, right? It's just turns it into a two-horse race in the West, and that's it.
Yeah, I...
At least for a few years. I mean, you've got some team center on the up. Minnesota could be a very good team in a couple years. So you never know what will happen. But for right now, yeah, that's terrifying for anyone in the Western Conference, including Golden State, I bet.
Yeah, the thing that's been annoying about the Durant sweepstakes, if he leaves OKC, is... they keep floating stories of why doesn't he just go to Golden State, and Golden State could make it work, and that would just be horrible, because then Golden State would, they're already, it's like Golden State is already feels like they're almost guaranteed to win a couple more rings, but with KD, that would cement it. that would be bigger than the Miami super team.
See, but I don't know how happy he'd be in Golden State, because, I mean, he wants touches. You don't go from being an MVP to taking this back seat. You think about when LeBron went to Miami. Wade and Bosch both kind of had to take a back seat in order for them to succeed. KD goes to Golden State. Steph's not going to take fewer shots. Thompson's going to have to give up some of his touches, I bet. Draymond's going to have to give up some of his touches. Everyone's going to have to make sacrifices. I don't know what it does to that team chemistry. In theory, yeah, it's a cemented dynasty. But I have this weird feeling that it could almost go a little bit sideways for Golden State, where they're still the greatest team in the NBA. But maybe it doesn't help them as much as they want. Maybe it hurts them in some aspects. I don't know. I could be wrong. Hopefully we never find out.
Yeah, Golden State's to the point where they don't need to land Durant to be a championship team. You look at all the pieces they have, and you know Golden State is going to be what San Antonio is, or what teams like the Lakers were in years past, where good players want to go there and just be a part of it. They're going to be teams. They're going to be players like of David West caliber, where he said, "I want to take less money and go to the Spurs because I just want to win." There are going to be other players like that who are going to look at Golden State when they're free agents. You know, most likely veteran players, and saying, "You know, I just want to be a part of Golden State and enjoy winning." And so, Golden State, you know, all their free agents are expendable pieces, except for Harrison Barnes. They'll probably try to work out something with him, but you know, their free agents are Brandon Rush, Leandro Barbosa, Maurice Spates. Those are guys they can let go, and their core is still solid for another year after that, and they can just, you know, keep perpetually picking up pieces if they play their cards right.
Yeah, realistically, they could let those pieces go and add better pieces, and the thought of that is just scary.
What they don't want to do is turn into Miami, where yeah, veterans were coming to join the team, but it was like 37-year-old veterans who really couldn't help them win.
Right.
Right. It was like six or seven veterans who were just there to sit on the bench and watch LeBron, Wade, and Bosh win in their rings.
Yeah, kind of like what Cleveland's run into, where they're adding Richard Jefferson, where they're adding Mo Williams. Sure, these guys can bring something to the table, but they're not helping you in the long run. And like we see now, Williams is just at the end of the bench being a cheerleader.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be another interesting thing when see what LeBron does. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because it all depends on who wins the title this year.
Right, right. And we have another series that wrapped up in the West between Golden State and Portland.
Yep. Not surprised, but darn it, Portland fought valiantly. Did you see the who was it? It was Hardwood.
Paradoxium. Yeah.
Yeah. You saw their alternate timeline?
No, I did not.
Oh, you didn't? He wrote a column on the alternate timeline where Dante Exum doesn't get injured.
Oh, that, and yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
Where they just as easily could have been in Portland's position where they get to the second round because of injuries. And
yeah, that was painful.
It might have been.
That was really painful, especially when you put it into the context of that it was just, you know, one little tiny part of the body on one guy that kind of spiraled this whole season. Yes, we had injuries with Rudy's knee, with Derek Favors' back, but man, what could have been? You know, we could have been essentially the Portland of this year, because
Portland's now going to be a hot destination team.
Right, because you add a piece and you're just building on top of things. That's kind of the position I think we hoped that the Jazz would be in this season, would be, okay, we didn't make the playoffs last year, but this year we did. We made it into that, you know, 5-6, worst case scenario, I think everyone was thinking 7th seed. And then that's something to say, hey, if you come here, Mr. Durant or whoever, we're going to be that much better. We're going to be in the top four in the West and competing.
Yeah. Yeah. Players like to be the guy that gets his team to the next level. But I think some players look at that. Players, I think, are much more willing to help a team that started the playoffs on the road and get them to home court advantage rather than here's a lottery team. I wonder if I can somehow get them into the playoffs at all.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Portland's interesting. I don't know. What do you think they need to add?
Well, they've moneyballed it really well this year. So Portland's one where you say, you know, your front court was good, but that's where the obvious upgrades need to happen. They're losing some of their bench guys. Gerald Henderson's a free agent. They probably let him walk, but a lot of their guys are cheap. In fact, Lillard is the only one who's going to be making more than $8 million next year. You know, he starts as $21 million next year. Everyone else is below that. You have some guys like, you know, Harkless could go, Myers Leonard could go, that they're going to work out contracts with them. They got their qualifying offers, but they have all the cap space in the world. So Portland, you know, this is a real season where they could do whatever they want. I mean, I know all teams have cap space. Portland really has cap space.
It's one of those things. I saw someone on Twitter just scrolling through the comments that people were making, pitched the idea of like Al Horford coming to Portland. It makes you wonder if they would take a chance on a Dwight Howard, you know, someone that maybe they're saying, okay, let's take a chance. This guy has potential. He's been talented in his career at times. Let's see what he can do in our system. But one of the guys that I still like floating the idea of is Harrison Barnes leaving Golden State and trying to play a bigger role, if you will, with the Blazers.
Yeah, I like the idea of them pursuing Harrison Barnes and Al Horford.
And they have the money to do it.
And they have, yeah, exactly. And so then you'd have, I mean, you know, this is a league where you can't really think more than 2 years ahead. You just kind of got to do what you got to do. And then when 2 years passes, then you deal with your new situation. So they will need to pay CJ McCollum in 2018. But, you know, let's worry about that when we get there. They have a great opportunity right now. And, you know, if they could land those two guys and then you still have solid support from, you know, Aminu and Ed Davis was good for them, Mason Plumlee, you know, then they've cemented themselves as a place to stay. And you never know what's going to happen in the offseason. Clippers might decide that they are going to go ahead and trade one of their big players. OKC could lose Kevin Durant. Portland could start, you know, if they land a couple good free agents, Portland could start as like the third best team in the West and go from there.
That's crazy, especially not trying to bring it up, but I have to. The conversation that was had at the beginning of this year where some people believe that Portland would be one of like the bottom three, bottom four teams in the West, that within 1 year they could be in the top four teams in the West. That's an insane turnaround. That's a Cleveland type turnaround with LeBron coming back.
It is. And to be fair to everyone, Vegas was among those people. But I kind of want to go ahead and shift to the East now because Cleveland's sitting there fat and happy, just waiting.
Yep.
And you have Toronto and Miami. Toronto is up 3-2. Game six is in Miami. I think this is going to go to a game seven.
I want Toronto to win, so I would not be upset if they won in Miami and got it over with. But it would be nice to have one of these series go to a game seven. Have we had one this year? I want to say we had one, and I don't remember who it was. I believe it was in the East, though.
Did we have a game seven?
I thought we had one with the Pacers for some reason.
Yeah, probably. Man, how quickly it leaves. Was it Indiana and Atlanta? Was that a game seven series?
I don't remember. It's not a big deal, but it is fun to have that.
I obviously didn't watch it. So
I'll be honest, I have not watched a lot of these NBA playoffs because there have been so many games where it's like I know who's going to win, it feels like. And there's just not been that desire to watch. But anytime you have two teams that have competed, especially the way that Toronto and Miami have, because every single one of those games has been close.
I'm just kind of looking back here. It was Toronto and Indiana, which was a game seven. Oh, I did watch part of that. Yeah. The deeper you get in the playoffs, the more exciting the game sevens are. I'm rooting for Toronto to advance, but I think Toronto Miami game seven would be really fun to watch. So I'm happy either way. It doesn't matter. Whichever team wins, they're going to lose to Cleveland.
Right.
So it's like you're competing to be the sacrificial lamb. But it's not bad to be the sacrificial lamb in the conference finals. I mean, that's where you want to be. You want to be able to say, hey, now we're one of the four best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, especially when you look at the fact that Toronto hasn't been there in I don't know how long, if they ever. I think they did make it to the conference finals we had discussed, but this was forever ago. And then you look at Miami, who's dealt with the loss of Chris Bosh, who's had critics saying that, you know, Dwayne Wade is old and over the hill. It'd be great for either team to say, yeah, we made it this far. And, I mean, who knows? If Cleveland plays like they played in the last series, there is no chance. It's another sweep. Because Cleveland looks like a team that could really give Golden State fits.
Yeah, that's that's the thing. Cleveland is stronger this year. Cleveland has their full roster this year. I mean, weren't Irving and Love out last year in the finals?
I know Irving, I think, got hurt. Was it game one and was done with the broken knee? And Love, I believe, was out as well. I think he had an injury also.
I think he was injured in the first round. So, if you have Cleveland going full health and playing like they are, Cleveland could be sitting there in the finals with three sweeps in a row, you know, waiting a week for Golden State to hurry up and get there. The only thing that's going to slow Cleveland down is they have to wait for Toronto and Miami to get their persons. You know, I mean, let's see, Golden State and Thunder start soon. I think it's Monday. Yeah, so game one of that is Monday. And so Cleveland could be waiting until probably Tuesday. Tuesday would be when they would start if it goes to game seven. If it can get wrapped up in game six, I don't know. Maybe they still wait Tuesday. I don't know how the schedulers would do that. But I would say the Warriors are not going to sweep the Thunder, but Cleveland will pretty likely sweep either Toronto or Miami. The other thing about Toronto and Miami is both of them have been facing injuries. You had Whiteside and Valanciunas go out. You have Carroll and Deng, who are both banged up. It's like all of their guys, both sides are just losing players. So whoever hobbles into Cleveland is going to be doing so at half strength anyway.
And that's exactly it. Hobbles. That series. Like, even if everyone were healthy, you know the Cavs are 75% chance likely to win that at least. But with the injuries, it's basically a done deal.
Okay, let's move a little to some interesting coaching news. Scott Skiles resigns from Orlando after 1 year. I know Scott Skiles quits everywhere he goes, but I am shocked that he only gave it 1 year.
I was pretty much with Mr. Don't Google Fournier, who dropped about it on social media. I have no idea what's going on. The only thing that I could think is maybe there's a health concern or something like that, but I've not heard anything about that because 1 year in is suspect.
Yeah, I read the Orlando Sentinel piece on it. They said that they felt like there was kind of a rift between January when they went 2-12. And there was a rift between him and the front office because he felt like Elfrid Payton is not the answer as their starting point guard for the future. And the front office disagreed with him. And even though it was their best record in a while, it was their best record since Dwight Howard left. It was still only 35-47. And I think he just felt like there were too many constraints on what he wanted to do with the team versus how the front office sees it. And, you know, I think he's probably at the age where he just didn't really feel like fighting it. But I'm still surprised. 1 year, I mean.
Yeah, you would think.
I think that's pretty much it for him, you know?
It's not like there's another job lined up ready for him right now. There's a lot of coaching changes happening, so it is possible. But it's not a situation like what you had with someone leaving Memphis and ending up in Sacramento. I think we might be talking about that in a minute. It's just surprising to me. You know, even if you have a disagreement, I would at least stay a second year and see what you can do to improve. You're 1 year into it.
Yeah, that has to speak to how the front office is. But at the same time, Scott Skiles, this is his fourth team. This is at least his fourth team, and he quits after 1 year. Okay, who's the next NBA franchise that wants to take a chance on a coach like that? You know he's a good coach, but you also know that if he's not happy, he could bail you on 1 year. And no NBA team wants to hire a coach
John,
for only one year.
One better. No employer in any field wants that. No one wants you to hand over a resume that says, well, I've quit my last five jobs after 6 months of trying it. It just wasn't working out. No, it's not a good career move, but maybe he's to the point where he says, I don't need the money. I don't want to deal with this.
He could wind up being like Larry Brown. You know, Larry Brown won everywhere, but he quit everywhere. And he won a ring with Detroit. But, you know, he's been in college the past few years because no NBA team wants to risk hiring him and knowing that they're going to get drama Larry Brown in year two and he'll probably just quit.
And maybe that's where he ends up, where he has a little bit more control over who he's offering the scholarships to and stuff like that. You know, that would make sense.
I'm looking at the NBA coaches, and Popovich has been there almost 20 years in San Antonio. Who do you think the second longest tenured coach is in the NBA?
Oh, man. Quinn Snyder's getting close. I know that. Is Spoelstra up there?
It's Spoelstra.
It is, okay.
Spoelstra has been there for 8 years. Rick Carlisle has been at Dallas for 8 years. He was hired about a week after Spo. And then the fourth longest tenured coach in the NBA is Dwayne Casey of the Raptors, who hasn't quite been there 5 years. Gone are the days where NBA coaches are at their jobs for 8 or 10 years. Those days are very, very gone. In fact, there are only five coaches in the entire NBA who are at their jobs before 2013.
See, and I got a real problem with this. I like to think that I'm one of the younger new age guys because I was just a boy back when when the Jazz were going to the finals and stuff. But there is so much haste to blame the coach when your team sucks. You put together a crap roster, and then you're like, hey, it's not working out. It's got to be the coach's fault. It's ridiculous. Or you get a superstar who comes in, like what you've seen in New York, a Melo, or you have a Dwight Howard incident, and that's on the coach because you've got some superstar diva on your roster. That's not the coach's fault. Now, I understand if you have a team that you've put together and there's just something that's not clicking. To me, the Jazz would have more of an argument than some of these other coaches where they've put together a good roster. Let's say that everyone was healthy this year and the Jazz were still losing all these games, close games. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit on the coaching. I'm not saying it is because there were numerous injuries to the Jazz this year and it was just a mess. But to me, that makes more sense than what some of these guys are getting fired for. Case in point, David Blatt in Cleveland. I love LeBron. I am a huge LeBron fan. I am cheering for the Cavs to win it all. But when it comes down to who their head coach is, I do not like the guy one bit. I do not like the front office for pushing Blatt out. I think it's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I mean... He's one good example where your star player just doesn't like him. Although, you know, I've heard David Blatt is hard to get along with by anybody. But I also look at Scott Brooks in Oklahoma City, where he got his team to the finals. He had deep playoff runs every year. And then they have a year where they just have injuries to everybody. Barely missed the playoffs, and they use that as an excuse to fire the coach. But can you honestly say that Scott Brooks wouldn't have gotten the Thunder to where they are now if he had had the exact same lack of health problems?
Yeah, the Thunder would be where they're going to be regardless.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in this weird era where the coach gets too much blame, and where in order to get coaches hired, you gotta have deals like you do with Stan Van Gundy or Doc Rivers, where they have control and they can make sure they get some job security. because they see just how coaches are, and players see how expendable head coaches are. You know, I mean, head coach in a way is like the father of the team. But if you're a teenager and you see your mom just getting a new stepdad every year, you're not going to respect the new one.
Right, right. You know, I really like the move that the Jazz made. I was not too pleased with the whole Ty Corbin situation because I was not one of those people who really felt he was given a fair shot. I thought he was dealt a raw hand with the whole trading Williams, starting over, lockout season. We need you to lose games so that we get a high draft pick. Don't win too many. But then again, there were the issues where he was starting veterans, playing veterans heavy minutes instead of developing the young guys that the front office was clearly banking on for the future. But the fact that they went in and Quinn Snyder is getting an extension even after missing the playoffs in his first few years, you've seen progress, you've seen player development, and it looks like a solid investment in a coach. And it wasn't just a 1 or 2 year extension. We're talking a 4 year add-on here. I think that says a lot, not just to the coach of, hey, we believe in you, but it says something to the players of, this is our guy. If you're coming here, you need to make it work with this coach. And I don't think you see that a lot in the NBA anymore.
Exactly. I mean, whoever the next coach is in Indiana, you can see how they dismissed Rick Carlisle. You can see how they dismissed Frank Vogel. How secure is the next guy coming in? The next guy coming in has got to see that job as maybe a 3-year deal, unless you're in the NBA finals or you're winning titles, because that's the way 20% of these, not 20%, 20 teams, that's the way 20 of these teams are. I mean, Quinn Snyder has been there 2 years. He's now the 13th longest tenured coach in the NBA. So let's see, there are only 10 coaches who've been in their job before 2014.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, that's amazing. Stan Van Gundy is the 11th longest tenured coach in the NBA, and he hits his 2-year mark tomorrow. That's crazy. And there's still some more coaches that, you know, Kurt Rambis is still technically the coach in the Knicks. I can't imagine that lasting much longer. It seems crazy to me. but the newest coach is Dave Yarger. He gets fired by Memphis, and now he's the Sacramento head coach, which I think is hilarious, because when the season began, it was the Sacramento Suicide Squad. Memphis made all of their crazy trades, and I thought they took the mantle for the new Suicide Squad. And now Yarger goes back to, now he goes to Sacramento. He goes from one crazy team to another. He just might be the right crazy guy to do it. Who knows?
Yeah, it seems like he ran from one small house fire and said, I'm not dealing with this, and then ran into a complete burning building for safety. It's not a good move. I don't see it ending well for him. I don't see it going all that great for Sacramento. But let's be honest, Sacramento is my Nets of the West team. I just don't know if they will ever put it together. But they do have some slick new logos and uniforms and all of that good stuff. So at least they'll look good losing this year.
Yeah, they had one of the better uniform designs in this offseason from what I've seen. And if that's your best news, great. I don't think Sacramento is going to be anything until they trade DeMarcus Cousins. I think they really just have to accept that reality.
Yeah, who knows? Someone will take a chance. Someone will take a chance on him. If they're willing to part, I don't know that they're willing to, though.
I don't think Sacramento's willing to yet. And it's crazy in a in a league that is so disloyal to their coaches, how loyal they are being to a player who has not proven anything. If you've been on the same team for 6 years and you have only won 30 games one season, that says something. But
yeah, it's like a Kevin Love situation, but worse. You know, because at least Kevin Love seemed to have his head on straight and they just couldn't put it together. Cousins does not seem to have his head on straight most of the time, and they're putting together even less than what the Wolves were. So
yeah, and you know, the Wolves also have what Sacramento has, which is they couldn't draft. The Wolves blew so many lottery picks, and the Kings are doing that now. The Kings have whiffed on their share. You know, Nick Stauskas was a draft pick. Jimmer Fredette was a draft pick. Thomas Robinson. They had all these lottery picks that they just completely blew it on.
Yeah, I think about the point guard draft for Minnesota, and that did not end as well as people thought it would.
Man, it's so crazy. I mean, Ricky Rubio has turned out to be a pretty good player for them, but if they had gone with Rubio and Curry instead of Rubio and Flynn, you know, that would be an interesting alternate timeline.
Yep,
Love would probably still be there.
But you can do that with anyone. You know, you can do that with the Jazz. Yeah. And I wanted them to draft Leonard over Burks because I didn't know who Burks was. Leonard was just a familiar name. I thought, hey, I remember him being pretty good in college. Let's draft him. Where would we be there? So same thing with the Paul George Hayward draft. You know, you can do that with anyone. And we've had our fair share of mistakes along the way, as almost any team has.
Yeah. Trey Burke, CJ McCollum. We can go on.
Yeah. Any more coaching things or should we move on to the latest Jazz news?
Let's just move on. There are still, you know, four teams with coaching vacancies, but next week I'm sure a couple of them will have been filled. So let's go ahead and go to the next one.
Okay. Yesterday, some news out of the Jazz camp were the team redesign, if you will, with new uniforms, including a pride jersey, new logos, and a new court design. Your thoughts on what they released yesterday?
I really like the court design. I like the cleanliness of the new logos. I prefer the stripes going all the way down on the side, but that's okay. I liked the home, road, and alternates. The pride one, my first reaction was repulsion. Maybe it'll grow on me. Not a big fan.
Okay, so I'm with you on the court design. I saw it, and I immediately thought Salt Palace, which was really kind of cool for me because I don't really remember the Salt Palace. I just remember the Delta Center. But I really like the court design. I think it goes along with what you're seeing a lot in the NBA is that smaller center logo, kind of a simplified logo that seems to be trending upward right now. I like the stripes on the side, the change there, and I like the lettering change. To me, it's a nice blend of old tradition meets new style, and I really like that bridge that they've kind of created that way. The alternate road, the green ones, I'm still trying to figure out if I like the word Utah as opposed to having the Jazz logo on there. I'm not really sure my thoughts on that just yet. Because that's a little like throwback to the 2000 decade with those baby blues. So we'll see how that one grows on me. And the pride ones, I'll be honest, I heard about it before I saw it. And I went, oh no, we didn't. And then I saw them and I went, well, it'll be nice to have another football soccer team here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the side-by-side picture with Malone, and I went, you know, that's actually kind of cool. And here's the thing. I hate sleeve jerseys for one reason in particular, and that is the fact that when I am playing, I hate sleeves. It, to me, it is just not a comfortable way to play basketball. Now, I know that doesn't mean a lot coming from a guy who just plays pickup a few times a week, but I can understand why LeBron hates the sleeves on those jerseys. With that being said, I see the part or the point from a marketing standpoint of these are something that I think can sell. I think fans, if they accept them as merchandise and not so much as these are our jerseys, I can see them being really popular because it's something you can wear, you know, outside of a game. It's just essentially a t-shirt. Yeah. And I think that's probably the reason they're doing it. But I do really like the throwback, you know, to the old warm-ups. I think that's a cool touch. Someone had posted a picture of one of them in purple, and I really liked the purple ones. But we get the navy, and they're kind of cool. I thought I'd hate them more than I do. I actually kind of like them.
Yeah, purple is no longer one of the Jazz colors. All of the new designs, it is strictly the blue and green and gold.
But I kind of like purple. I don't want it as all of our jerseys, but like the alternates, I wouldn't mind a purple alternate.
I agree. You know, I don't like sleeve jerseys because if you have sleeves, you're not a jersey or a t-shirt. But I mean it's completely for marketing that they tried putting sleeves on any of these because fans are more likely to wear a t-shirt than a jersey. So I get that side of it. I just don't think we should make our players wear them.
Would you wear one?
would I wear a t-shirt?
Yeah, would you wear one of those?
I would wear a t-shirt, but not that one.
Okay. On that note, let's wrap it up. Everyone, thank you for listening and tuning in to an episode of No Jedi and the Germs Show. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the Google. You can visit our website at tornbysports.com. You can find us on Facebook and on Twitter. You can follow us at Jedi and Germs. Individually, at Torn by Devin, at Germs Guy, and even though Alan is not here, we'll give him a nod for at Jedi Zog. And tune in to us next week when we will have the Jedi himself hopefully back on the show. John, if you will, please take us out.
Bye, everybody.